Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, I'm Steve Mould.
I'm Helen Arnie.
I'm Matt Parker, and this is another episode of a podcast of Unnecessary Detail, the show where we just keep talking about stuff until it gets interesting. And that has not failed yet.
Yes, and this time I'll be talking about excitable mediums, and I don't mean people who are really keen to talk to the dead.
I'll be providing an update on an incredibly important campaign of mine. That was a real sarcastic
And I have a song about a space tortoise, which is incredibly important as well, because everyone at home can sing along with it.
Ooh.
Now that sounds unnecessary.
Exactly what I was aiming for.
Let's get those details.
Matt, you're first up, as we've been told you have an update for us. I hope it is excruciatingly detailed.
Oh, you know it is. This has been a long-running saga of much detail. And we should probably recap, because I don't want to assume everyone listening went to our 2017 live tour, You Can't Polish a Nerd.
I mean, quite a lot of people did.
True, very true. But for the handful who didn't, I ran a campaign that I started in 2017, and it is still going, to try and fix the street signs in the UK that depict a football, a soccer ball, a classic pentagons and hexagon, whatever you think of when you think football, soccer ball, this is that ball. They somehow managed to inaccurately portray that on a street sign. And so I have had a campaign, very long running now campaign, in an attempt to get the street signs fixed. And I finally have an update.
It's interesting. You say it's ongoing, but the government doesn't think it is. The government thinks it ended a long time ago.
And I have that in writing from them.
Sorry, okay, there's two things here. Like, one,
yes,
I remember in 2017, for some reason, when we were on tour, we just seemed to go past so many of these football signs.
And so many.
It was incredibly infuriating to know that this campaign was happening. And the next time we went on tour, the football signs might be fixed. And basically, we've never been on tour since then. And this may be a part of that thinking. Until the signs are fixed, we will not tour again. But also, can you describe how the signs are wrong? Because I think it's quite hard to imagine how the sign can possibly be wrong.
Great point. So, I originally spotted the signs were wrong on our 2015 tour, just for graphs, where we were, I can't remember which motorway, we were traveling south, and I was looking out the window, and a street sign came by, because if there's like a zoo or some area of interest or a place you might want to drive to, there'll be like a brown style sign, and it'll have an icon for that thing as well as the name of it.
Yeah. It's a very British thing.
Very British.
Yeah.
The icon for a football stadium is a picture of a football. However, on the football, which should be made of hexagons, which have six sides, and pentagons, which have five sides, they have inaccurately depicted the pentagons with six sides, making them look like hexagons. On the surface, this doesn't seem like that big a deal. Other than the fact they can't count to six. But the surface of a ball cannot be made out of hexagons. on the very literal surface, not only have they depicted a ball that is incorrect, they've depicted a ball which is mathematically impossible. You cannot make a ball completely out of hexagon patches. It just does not work, and we can prove that mathematically.
You can make a nice honeycomb. You can make a beehive. You can make some 100%. Corrugated cardboard. Yeah. But all of those things are flat. So yeah, I can see that.
I'd really like to think that the designer of the sign really struggled with it. You know, like, I've got to just depict this spherical thing, but I've only got a flat surface. I guess I'll just have to tile the plane. You know, so he just shows like all hexagons because he couldn't use pentagons.
People will understand.
People will understand.
It's 2D. Of course I'm using hexagons in 2D. I'd use pentagons in 3D. But not on a sign.
You do expect a little bit of like lateral thinking, right? Because like a stately home, there'll be like a picture of just any old stately home or like a castle. It'll be a little tiny image of a castle, but that doesn't necessarily look like that particular castle. Or like Bird World has a picture of a bird. There's no guarantee that that exact breed of bird will be available.
No.
It's quite simple. It's just like white on brown. It's not like a multicolored thing. It's simple. You see a sign for a zoo. It's got an elephant. If there's no elephants there, will you be asking for your money back? I don't know. I probably would be asking.
I don't know if you're arguing with or against me right now, Helen.
I think the elephant thing was a bad example.
Yeah, I think so. I think I would be asking for my money back if there was an elephant. I'd be like, if I went to Bird World and there were no birds, I'd be like, no, this is definitely unacceptable.
I will say, in their defense, drawing a complicated, for some very generous definition of complicated, shape, a 3D shape on a 2D surface, like we would call that projecting in mass. You've got to project down your 3D shape onto a 2D surface. That's difficult. So I get it. Drawing, like, it's way easier. Drawing hexagons together in 2D on a flat surface, nice, easy, straightforward. I can see why they went for that, for the sign, instead of doing the complicated drawing to project down to make it look like a 3D ball on a 2D sign. So I started, this is back in 2017, a parliamentary petition, which if you get over 10,000 signatures, they have to give you a reply. Now, I'm skipping over a lot here because as I mentioned at the time, and this is in the filming of our show, it took me a while to convince them I wasn't joking around and this was a legitimate concern. Once I convinced them I was genuinely upset about this, they let me have the petition. We got 22,536 signatures. Thank you very much, everyone who signed it. And they then wrote to me to say no, that they're not going to fix the signs, which I was very upset about. We then did a Freedom of Information request to get all the internal communications about why they said no. I then did an update in 2019. In my 2019 Humble Pie show, I got a lot of material out of this, is what I'm saying, with all the internal communications we found, and they didn't really take it seriously. There was no will from reading the emails they were passing around internally in the government and taking the response they gave me. I was pushing at a very closed door. There was no internal will whatsoever to fix this problem, even though they're depicting balls that cannot exist. So I had to have a rethink, and I've come up with a new plan. If you don't mind opening up, I've got a picture of what the signs look like, and we'll put this on social media. So if you're not in the UK, you're not familiar with it, you can see the problem.
It's interesting that even in that design, they're not regular hexagons.
Oh, yeah.
It's as if they've thought about the fact that there will be some perspective and curvature and stuff like that, but they haven't gone all the way.
Exactly. They've tried to 3D it up a little bit. But hexagons don't do that.
Okay, so my original hope that it was a conflicted design and not knowing what to do, that's out the window now.
Yeah.
I think so.
They've obviously thought about making it a projection and they've just failed.
Yeah. The hexagons on the edge are distorted. Some of them are smaller, like it would be on a ball, but they've just not made the leap from the dark coloured hexagons being actual pentagons.
You know what? A lot of people gave me sass and they think I'm taking this too seriously. And when I say this represents a fundamental lack of respect for geometry in modern society, people are like, oh, it's just pentagon. I'm like, no, people don't care, even when it's made their lives more difficult. One of my viewers on YouTube, Patreon supporter, got in touch because when they and their partner got married, they were both very nerdy, they thought, oh, wouldn't it be great if we had a hexagonal tiling effect on our wedding cake?
Oh, yeah.
Because hexagons great on a cylinder. No problems there. In fact, some would say the optimal choice. So they sent the baker a 3D render. I think they knocked it up in CAD of what it would look like with the hexagons on the wedding cake.
Are you talking about the sides of the cake or the top of the cake?
Sides of the cake.
Wraps around, no problem.
They received the cake on their wedding weekend and the baker had cut out octagons from the icing.
Octagons. Now,
regular octagons or any octagons, convex, do not tile a surface. So the poor baker had just done their best to kind of shove the octagons together. But they can't, they cannot, they don't cover the surface. Oh. If they just looked at the images, hexagons have 6 edges, octagons have 8 edges. They thought it was very funny. I mean, thankfully they had a sense of humor. They just liked the thought of some baker swearing at a cake because in the picture, the shapes all go together neatly. But for some reason in reality, they don't.
That's a wedding cake with a story. That's definitely a keeper, isn't
it? I love
it?
That. It's like the baker was like, I've been sent this Escher nightmare of a non-physically real thing. And, and they're just doing their best. And they're like, these guys are trying to trick me, but I'll do it.
Was this an illusion they sent me? So Timon and partner very kindly sent me a photo of their wedding cake. We can share that as well. So if people want to see the attempt to tile. But the baker could have used the correct shape and their life would have been infinitely easier.
Yeah.
For probably a reasonably strict use of the word infinitely. But yet, they didn't. So I just lost all hope. People don't care about shapes. They don't care about how they work. I've given up. I don't think I can get the political will to change the science. However, while I talk a lot of chat about how you cannot make a ball entirely out of hexagons, you can make a ball out of some hexagons. So I thought, what if I commission a new football, which from one specific point of view looks like the ball in the street sign? I invite you both to open file exhibit A, where you will see a football which looks exactly like the street sign.
It does.
Oh my gosh. What?
From that one specific angle.
That's amazing.
Well, two, actually.
What?
Front and back. Yeah, look at that.
That is ludicrously realistic. Like, even the distortion is the same.
Yeah.
It is so good. Someone called John Paul got in touch. They run a company called 12 Pentagons, and they make custom ridiculous footballs. Because I've done other things about footballs and geometry. They got in touch and said, hey, as a fellow lover of football geometry, let me know if you ever want to collaborate on a ball. And I was like, have I got a challenge for you? I need a ball that looks like this street sign from at least one angle, from a minimum of one orientation. It's got to look like the sign. And so John Paul and their partner Allison got to work, and this is the mighty result. However, if you look at exhibit B, you will see it from the side.
Oh.
And it's a bit of a nightmare.
That's a mess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Scott, they've done it with rotational symmetry. I like that. Those two funny shapes, they'll rotate around that central point. Ooh, it's nice.
Yeah, they've done a really nice job. So from two angles, it looks exactly like the signs, but you don't see all of the shapes on the sign. There's definitely hexagons in the middle, and there's implied hexagons around the outside.
Yeah.
They have then, where you can't see the rest of those side shapes, made them not hexagons.
Oh, yeah. There's some little sort of house shapes, the little house shapes, and there's a
little houses,
shape that looks a lot like a football field in the middle, which I feel has significant potential.
Oh, yeah,
there.
The octagon in the middle. Yeah, look at that.
Yes, don't show that to the baker, Christ.
Yeah.
So, the little house shape, pentagon.
Oh, yeah.
So you need, now I say need, there are other ways to get around this, but the classic way to make a ball, you need 12 pentagons. All these sorts of shapes, there's got to be 12 pentagons. This is why John Paul called their company 12 pentagons, because you're making a ball, you're using 12 pentagons.
Nice.
And if you look at the side view,
it makes sense now.
You can see 6 of them. There's 3, one, but they're all next to each other. So instead of being spaced out around the ball, you can see 3 on the left, one on top of the other. Boom, boom, boom. 1, 2, 3. And then on the right, another 3, either side of the octagon. And then the same thing on the other side, there's your 12 pentagons.
Correct.
So we had to hide the pentagons out of sight on the equator, if you will, of the ball, So the two poles are pure hexagon goodness.
Whoa. When you said that you were going to talk about the, let's call it the football controversy, I thought this is great. I'm going to ask Matt if he's seen this YouTube channel. I guess the YouTube algorithm knows you and I very well, and it was serving us up the same things.
Correct. We give it a lot of ourselves, Steve.
I came across John Paul's YouTube channel as well.
Oh, amazing.
He makes these incredible balls. Like one of them, he peeled an orange and then like cut leather into shape of all the peeled bits and put it back together into a football.
Oh,
so he posted a video about making the street sign ball, and I was trying to find it and I couldn't find it. So I was going to say, hey, have you seen this? Did you ask him to take it down because you're not ready or something?
No, no. No, I did not ask him to take it down. He got so excited because I was like, let's collaborate on the ball.
Yeah.
And I was then, because he's based in the US, like he's British, but he lives in St. Louis. And I was like, oh, mate, I'm going to be over there in a couple months. I'll come by and we can film me getting the ball from you.
Nice.
But as he was making the ball, he got so excited, he accidentally made a TikTok.
Oh,
which
TikTok,
we all know what that's like.
Yeah.
And so once it's so many people sent me that TikTok because they're like, it's that ball that you didn't want. I'm like, I know, I've asked. Literally, that my ball that I want. So anyway.
I should have known.
Yeah. But the clip is up. I've not asked him to take. I'm like, look, if we can get the word out there, I'm all for it. So it's definitely, there's a TikTok. I think he put it up as a YouTube short as well. We will dig around and we'll provide links. So now, instead of having a campaign to change the street signs to match the football, I'm going to start a new campaign to change the football to match the street signs. Because if the Premier League switches to this ball, the street signs will be correct. But you're thinking, Matt, how are you going to do that? How are you going to convince the Premier League to change? Well, I went to visit Liverpool Football Club. And I took the ball with me.
Oh, my God.
I got their sports analytics folks, not the players, to be fair. They're nerds, my people.
Let's speak to the nerds first.
They're like, which of the players do you want? I'm like, don't bother me with your football players. They won't understand. Give me your sports analytics folks. So we had a kick around with the Impossi ball.
Amazing.
As this ball is named. And they said, with no doubt whatsoever, that the players would hate it and would probably refuse to use it.
Wow.
Apparently, because the ball changes how it looks as it rotates.
Yeah.
That's not what you want in competitive football. And we, you know, it's not as homogeneous is not the right word, but you want a ball where it's very consistent around the surface. Yeah. So when it's rotating, the fluid dynamics moving through the air are predictable. Whereas this, depending on which axis it's rotating on, would have different flight patterns, which I think is adding to the game. I think this is a feature. Think of the skill. You got to orientate the ball so you get the correct axis for the shot you want to kick. Come on.
Yeah, no, that's stupid. But
oh, there's the line, Steve. Is that the line?
There's like tennis, which everyone knows and loves. Then there's real tennis, which is tennis with like a roof you have to hit along the way. Yeah. And it's niche, but there's a lot of devotees for it. And it's a sport in its own right and growing in its own way. I feel like there could be impossible football. Could take off. And, you know, it would find its tribe. That tribe would be really small.
I think the issue is kind of like about like how much symmetry have you got, isn't it? Like typically, I mean, they change the ball every year, don't they?
They do, yes. For like the World Cup, we'll have a new ball every 4 years.
And you can analyze the symmetry of it. Sometimes it'll have the symmetry of an octahedron. Sometimes it'll have the symmetry of a dodecahedron or something like that, which is very interesting in itself. And sometimes they'll remove some of the symmetries of one of those objects. And so it'll have more rotational symmetry, but not mirror symmetry and things like that. I think the issue with this ball is that, I mean, it just hardly has any symmetry, right? It's got rotational symmetry only.
Yes. It's got as much symmetry as we could hide around the edges of the street sign design.
Yeah.
We were working with a flawed design, and the fact that it even exists as a 3D object, I think, is pretty
good. Does that feel like a dead end, or are you still trying?
Oh, no, we're going to give this a go. If people go to mathsballs.com, that's math, M-A-T-H-S, ball.com. Yes, it's the same website that I used previously for the petition. and it is not Matt's Balls, mathsballs.com. Right. You can join a new petition, because why not? We're going to try and convince the Premier League. Sign up, vote, and tell the Premier League they should switch to this ball so the street signs are correct.
Well, I'm in. I'm all in.
Good luck. Yeah, I'm not. Just leaving you guys there. You carry on. I can support the principle, but
come on, look at it.
It is a beautiful thing. From the front.
I want the Premier League to put some pressure on the government to be like, look, now this guy's a problem for us. If you could just fix the signs, he'll go away. And I promise I will.
The thing I want to talk about is actually tangentially related to football.
As opposed to my deeply related to football.
I'm now trying to work out how my bit is going to be extremely tangentially football
related.
Well,
let's see what bar of tangential Steve is about to set.
Yeah. Let's be clear, though. Neither bit is because either of us feel passionately about football. But so I get a lot of emails suggesting ideas for videos. Some things will come up repeatedly and I'll think, yeah, that could be a good idea for video if I was able to reproduce it for myself and if I could understand what was going on. And sometimes I just can't. Like, often it'll be something that happens so infrequently that someone gets excited when it happens and they'll send me a video, but it's really hard for me to reproduce it. One of those is like, so someone will make a hot chocolate for themselves and it'll have like a layer of foam on top. And what will happen is that top layer of bubbles on the foam they'll all pop at the same time. It'll happen in this wave that travels across the top surface of the hot chocolate. A bubble pops and then all the neighboring bubbles pop and it just sweeps across the surface like that. And it'll happen repeatedly. And I could never get it to work. And I wasn't exactly sure what was going on.
And people were just filming their hot chocolates when this happens?
Yeah. I mean, you know, in the age of Instagram, people are just filming their hot chocolates.
I am out of touch.
No, I think they'd sort of, if they notice it happening repeatedly, they'll sort of, they'll record
so also
the next
one. The same
one.
Mug of hot chocolate will have several of these waves.
Yeah. God. And then I got an email recently from Rudy Stevens. And Rudy Stevens printed something on their printer, their 3D printer. And it's like a ring-shaped trough. It's about palm-sized. And the cross-section of the trough is about 8 millimeters. So it's about 10 centimeters across. But if you cut through the trough, that's about 8 millimeters across. So that gives you an idea of size.
It's the bottom half of a donut. Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, bottom half of a very thin...
The surface of a donut.
Yeah. That's a good way of thinking about it. Though actually, the edges come up a little bit more than that. So it's not cut through the, let's say, the equator of the donut. It's a little bit higher.
Yep. Okay.
Is it like one of those essential oil diffusers that you used to put on top of a lamp bulb?
Ooh. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Like a ring that with like a dip in it.
Yeah, that no longer work because everyone has LEDs and they don't produce enough heat.
Yeah. Old tech. They went the way of Betamax. It's like the massive box of DVDs that I have under the desk behind me from our three previous shows. It's just obsolete now.
Do you know what though, Helen? That's a really helpful observation for me and you'll find out why in a minute. Very quickly, actually. So he wanted to warm it up.
Oh, wow. Mystery solved.
No, this is probably this wouldn't fit over a light bulb. So his idea was he would fill it with lighter fluid, right? And then set it alight and then it would heat up because he wanted to stretch it and bend it or something like that into a specific shape. So heat it up first and then it becomes malleable because of the type of plastic that is used in 3D printing. You just get it a little bit hot and then you can move.
And to be fair, your solution to a lot of life's problems is set it on fire.
Yeah. That's true. We're kindred spirits, literally. So he lit it and then it's kind of this ring then of fire, right? But then what happened after a certain amount of time is instead of being this ring that's burning, it was just burning in one spot. But that spot was zooming around inside the ring.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So I was like, I've got to try this. So ooh. I asked him to send me the file and I printed it out for myself and... Yeah, I got it to work. It's incredible. If there's a lot of lighter fluid in there, it will just burn as a ring. But as the amount of fluid gets a bit lower, it starts to do this thing. When you first light it, you know, you light it on a point around the ring, and then it'll actually, you'll get 2 points of flame and they'll travel outwards in each direction from where you lit it, and then they'll meet on the opposite side of the ring, and then they'll go out, and that'll be the end of it. So, but if you keep doing it and you fiddle around a little bit, you'll eventually get this flame going round and round. It's about one revolution per second of this flame zipping around, maybe a bit faster than that. Yeah, it's very, very cool.
And is there a size of ring where it stops working?
Well, this is what I want to do. I want to make different sizes. I want to make different enclosures. So, you know, I mentioned that it's not exactly half a donut. It's cut slightly above. Maybe if it's shallower or less shallow, you know, there's more of a gap, there's less of a gap. Will it change things and make it bigger, all that sort of stuff?
Can we play Guess the Mechanism?
Yeah, go on.
Is it to do with heat differential? The bit that's on fire is really warm and is somehow drawn towards the colder bit.
You
know what I mean? Like convection.
Yeah.
Convection, but not up and down. It's left and right. Like all around in a circle.
Yeah. So like in the way the weather, like air moves from high pressure to low pressure, something like that.
Is it like cold things are attracted to hot things? But then why would it go one way, not the other? Like, why wouldn't it just spread out? I mean, that's actually not really a workable idea. Okay, now I don't know.
I think there might be some fluid dynamic stuff in there.
And convection doesn't really work sideways.
Is it accumulation of vapor? Because let's assume the flame is already moving.
Yeah.
Behind it, it has burnt all the vapor.
Yeah.
There's just the liquid left. In front of it, however, hasn't been burnt for one whole revolution.
Yeah.
So it's now accumulated vapor ready to be burnt.
Yes.
And then so on. That's my guess.
And by the time it gets a background to where it started, there is new vapor to be burnt.
There's new vapor.
Yeah.
And there's always more vapor in front of it because that's the bit that's the longest since it was burnt than there is behind it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is my thinking as well.
Good thinking.
And it's an example of an excitable medium.
Oh, is that like when you predicted the future a moment ago?
and we all got really excited about it.
We got pretty excited.
And as a result, because you got excited, you need some what's called a refractory time. And you're not going to get excited again for a little while. And that's an important feature of an excitable medium. Now, genuinely, the slowest example that I know of an excitable medium is a forest. A forest has all this energy that can be spent by combustion. So if you have a forest fire, you get this wave that travels through the forest. It's not a wave in the traditional sense of, you know, like a simple harmonic oscillator where you can apply all the kind of equations that you would for that. We get standing waves and reflection and interference and all that sort of stuff. It's a different kind of wave. It's more of a pulse wave that travels through.
More like dominoes.
Like dominoes, exactly. Mm. There's this refractory time where you can't have another wave until a certain amount of time has passed. And in the case of a forest fire, it's the amount of time it takes to grow a new forest, right? So that's an incredibly slow, excitable medium. Whereas the flame going around the ring is much faster. It takes a lot less time to be ready again for the next wave.
How big would a planet have to be? So if you had a continuous strip of land around around the equator, around a great circle, by the time the fire got all the way around the planet, the forest is regrowing.
That's a really good question. I'm going to work that out.
The Earth is too small.
I think the Earth is probably too small.
But there will be a size at which
above
that it would work.
We just need to find out what the speed of a forest fire is.
Yeah.
And then we can work it out. And
that feels an exercise we should leave for the listeners.
I think we'll leave that for the listener. Yeah, so an example that's very similar to the lighter fluid in a ring-shaped trough is a Mexican wave. So if you've got a half-full stadium, and all the fans are on one side and the other side's empty, and you start a Mexican wave at one end, it will travel across to the other end of the block of fans, and then it will just stop. Because humans, it turns out, have a refractory time when it comes to doing a Mexican wave, right? You see a wave coming, you see the person next to you stands up, you stand up as well and sit back down again. In the moments that follow, you are not ready to look the other way and see the wave coming back and stand back up. It takes time.
It's like a refresh rate.
It's a bit, yeah. A refractory time is basically a refresh rate for the individual kind of pixels that are the people. But if you have a complete loop of fans, a complete loop of pixels in the stadium, then you can have a Mexican wave that just goes round and round and round and round and round. But with waves in excitable mediums, you cannot have reflections. You can only have continuous waves in loops.
That's why you don't get interference, you don't get standing waves, you don't get any of that kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah. And the most interesting thing that I discovered is if you leave the fire going round and round for long enough, eventually the plastic starts to burn and then it's all ruined.
What happens if you leave the football fans going round with a Mexican wave long enough?
Do you know what? There's probably like a secondary refractory time, which is like, I'm actually sick and tired of doing Mexican waves at this point.
Yeah, the fuel is expended, the fuel of enthusiasm.
Yeah. I mentioned Mexican waves in a video once, and I got a load of comments saying, we just call them waves.
Oh.
I think they were Americans. I think it was in the US, people saying, we just call them waves here. So it's interesting, isn't it? I just thought everyone called them Mexican waves. I think it's because it first happened at a World Cup match that was being held in Mexico. Yeah.
Our producer Laura is nodding.
Nodding along.
It turns out our producer Laura knows more about football than any of us and is keeping so quiet because I think she's just enjoying
these morons trying to talk about football.
Around.
Deeply overqualified.
Matt, what's a Mexican wave in Australia?
Well, there's two issues here.
Okay.
Someone trying to start. You go to the cricket in Australia, there's always someone trying to start a Mexican wave. And the excitation, like the activation energy is so high.
Yeah, yeah.
They will start waves and they will peter out almost immediately.
Cricket doesn't reach the terminal velocity of excitement that you need.
There's definitely a critical mass. Because I think humans in their ground resting state take a lot of activation to get up if they're not looking for the wave coming.
Yeah.
So the first time you start, it struggles. The bulk of the time, though, the cricket in Australia, because the sun's so hot, and traditionally that would be illuminating half the stadium, no one wants to sit on that side. So everyone sat. It's your first scenario, Steve. Everyone sat on like one side of the stadium if they can. So there's no, you haven't got that complete circuit.
I wonder, so are Australian stadiums twice the size that they need to be to allow people to slowly move around during the tours?
To move around
cricket
as the
matches
sun goes,
can last a whole day, can't they? I mean, you're out
the tickets
the
are genuinely
time.
More expensive on the shady side because you're out of the sun. The alternate activity, if the wave is not available, is to see who can stack the most beer cups in a continuous tower before security comes and confiscates it.
Of course,
whole stadium gets involved. It's pretty special.
I love that community spirit.
Cricket, real entertaining sport, you know.
I mean, is the movement of an Australian crowd like a medium of its own as the sun moves across?
And the
mass of people like
because
move
of the
around?
Path of the sun, you tend to start the game with one side covered in sun and then it gradually lifts up. So you get more and more shade as the sun is lifting. So the other side doesn't become sunny. Maybe I'm revealing the fact that I only tend to go to 2020 cricket matches. Maybe it's a different deal if you're there.
Yeah, 2020 is a bit more exciting, isn't it?
Too exciting.
You can get a good Mexican wave going with that. Go on.
The Big Bash League, as it's called, because it's a serious sporting activity.
Steve, can you please get us out of this 2020 hole that we have dug ourselves into and bring it back to the hot chocolate, please?
Yes, I can. So, yeah, to go back to the hot chocolate, you've got this layer of bubbles. And I'm theorizing here, but you know, it's not just one layer of bubbles, right? It's a stack of layers of bubbles. And that top layer of bubbles is slowly getting weaker and weaker, presumably because it's exposed to the air. So they're evaporating, they're getting thinner, they're getting more tenuous as bubbles. But because they're all sandwiched in next to each other, shoulder to shoulder, they're kind of supporting each other. So if one bubble pops because it just gets too weak, then it's no longer providing support for all the neighboring bubbles around it. So they pop as well. Then those neighboring bubbles pop and so on. And you get this wave across the surface. And the reason it can keep repeating is because you've just exposed another layer of bubbles underneath that are much stronger because they haven't been evaporating, but then they're now exposed to the air. So you've got this refractory time whilst the next layer starts to weaken and then you get another wave of bubble collapse.
And you've not got this to work, Steve, in a mug.
I have not managed to do it, no. But my thinking is, if I can get a whole load of people into a stadium and they've all got a hot chocolate...
Right. I feel like holding a hot chocolate will slow down their refresh rate.
It will.
Put the hot chocolate down again. Stand.
It's going to be a very precarious Mexican wave.
You know those sports stats people you were talking to, Matt?
Yep.
Do you think they would have the same reaction if I said, hey, can I just quickly speak to everyone in the audience before the match?
You know, I may be the person most qualified with experience of asking a question like that to let you know the answer is a resounding no.
Damn it.
This episode is sponsored by Brilliant.org because we've talked a lot of detail. Well, we've talked a lot of detail. You've listened to a lot of detail, but if you're anything like me, you don't just want to passively absorb some detail. No, you want to get involved. The absolute best way to learn anything in depth is by doing it yourself. And Brilliant has loads of interactive courses across all things science, engineering, technology. I'm just listing things that aren't maths. Loads of maths. There's plenty of maths on there as well. Particularly, there's a course at the moment about exploring data visually. And I love analyzing, cleaning up, visualizing data. And if you've ever wanted to get into it, the course first of all takes you through all the fundamentals you need to know and then gives you some practice data. Not like easy, neat practice data. They build you up to data. You got to filter yourself and you got to do something special with it. And they make sure you're learning the whole way through. So you can join the millions of people learning the brilliant way if you head over to brilliant.org/APOUD. That's a podcast of unnecessary detail. You can get the free 30-day trial. I mean, anyone can get that. But if you then want to upgrade to a paid one, the first 200 people will get 20% off if you use our URL. That's brilliant.org/APOUD. We'll link it in the show notes. So head over there, get started, and start learning with Brilliant's fantastic interactive lessons. And thank you to Brilliant for sponsoring this podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How tenuously related is your thing to football, Helen?
Well, as we've been recording, I've realised there may actually be a tenuous connection that I will need to check in with you about when we reach that point. Look out for that. Beware. I've brought a song that I recorded at one of our live An Evening of Unnecessary Details in London. Those people who are not in London very rarely get to come and see our shows. We do some in New York. We did one in Bristol recently. Oh, we have some live stream ones coming up as well, which is very exciting. So can watch them from anywhere in the world. But if you do happen to come to one of our live ones, sometimes I make the audience help me with something like singing an a cappella song about space tortoises. Just as an example, taken from nowhere, which is what we did last month. And we recorded it. And oh my goodness, our Evening of Unnecessary Detail audience had hidden talents in the a cappella department.
It sounded pretty special in the room.
It was a real moment.
It was very special. Yeah. I taught the audience some different parts to the song. They sang them back while I sang a bit over the top. And you're going to hear it in a minute because I did record it and it only required very slight editing, mostly of my mistakes, to make it sound like it was superb. So the song is about space animals and a particular type of space animal that was the first animal to circumnavigate the moon.
Oh.
There's a lot of knowledge around about first animals in space. So like first dog in space, Laika, first cat in space. So I've brought my daughter's scrapbook that we made in lockdown, which is her space scrapbook. I will put some pictures of this online. I'm going to show you now. Started filling pages of space animals and what countries they came from. So Laika came from the USSR. The Japanese space program sent a frog into space at some point. There's a picture of a frog. America sent a mouse. China sent what I believe is a guinea pig.
What you believe is a guinea pig?
I believe that's a picture of a guinea pig. It's really hard to tell with my daughter's drawing.
Has the European Space Agency sent an animal into space, or did ESA get going after all of that?
This is pre-ESA. This is like Wild West 50s, 60s, attempting to land on the moon. No one knew what would even happen to an animal or a human if it went round the back of the moon. Like, it might explode.
Yeah, like, would it get an infection? Would it get didn't they quarantine and stuff like that? I'm just amazed that an animal has walked all the way around the moon. I'm just aghast.
Well, it was in a ship. It was in a rocket, right? It was
circumnavigated
it.
Okay, right,
not by landing and walking. And then, here you go, there's Felicet, who is the French cat, first cat in space. But it's this one. It is, if you can see under my daughter's drawing, it is a tortoise that the USSR sent in 1968.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
And it was the first animal, sent two of them actually, first animal to be sent all the way around the back of the moon to find out if it was just even possible. So this was the Soviet Zond 5 mission. It was the first one round the moon and back. And as well as these tortoises who didn't have nice names like Laika or Strelka or Belka or whatever, like the dogs, they were called number 22 and number 37, which is a lot of tortoises to choose from. Look, they also sent a load of other living things like worms, eggs from a type of fly, some vegetable cells, like flowers, bacteria, all this stuff to find out how it handled nearly a week's worth of space radiation, because that's how long it takes to go all the way around the moon and back in a 1960s Soviet rocket. They also sent a full-sized mannequin covered in radiation detectors in the actual seat of the rocket instead of an actual human, because confidence was not particularly high in the Soviet Space Agency at that time, because the last couple of rockets had failed to launch and or blew up on the launch pad.
Oh.
Would anyone like to play the game of why a tortoise?
Oh, yes, please.
Oh.
Is it because they live for a very long time? So if they misjudged the journey.
Yeah. they're tough. They're hardy.
Yeah.
They're really hardy, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, if it took way longer than they expected, you don't want to send a mouse because
it's not going to make it. Yeah.
That's bad planning on everyone's
part. Is it because they already come with half the space suit for free?
That is some of it.
No.
One of the main reasons was because they were one of the easier animals to strap down to the inside of a rocket.
Oh, that's not a way to do that.
But if you strap them down, how can they work the controls? I don't understand.
I didn't think today would end with they're one of the few animals you can glue in place.
Yeah. So spoiler, they did actually survive, unlike many other space animals that were sent previously, as did the two control tortoises left on Earth during the mission. What's beautiful about this whole idea is that these tortoises needed to go at 25,000 miles an hour to exit Earth's gravitational pull. And tortoises are not famed for their...
famously more of a slow and steady.
Yeah, exactly. So there's this beautiful irony. And then there's another beautiful irony that these tortoises were called step tortoises. Another reason they were chosen is because they're quite small. So they were step tortoises. And what I've done with this song is I've taken a poem by our good friend, my good friend and yours, Brian McInwells, who has performed at An Evening of Unnecessary Detail. He wrote a poem called One Small Step.
Aww.
About the first tortoise to circumnavigate the moon. I think the song tells the story. I'm not going to say much more about it, but what I want to do is just kind of give the podcast listeners an experience of the song so maybe they can choose to sing along at home and take one of the parts that our audience took. Do you mind, Steve and Matt, if I teach you the parts of the song in real time? Okay. And what they meant. Which of you has a better sense of rhythm? Sorry, which of you has the least bad sense of rhythm?
It's going to be a race to the bottom, I'm afraid.
So what we're trying to do is create a sense of the immense potential of the universe. And to do that, we're going to take the rhythm from Queen's We Will Rock You and do that with hand claps and finger clips. Right.
I will take the rhythm section. Okay. I don't know if I'm better, but I will take the rhythm section.
They call me the metronome, so.
Metronome.
They don't. They don't call me that.
No, no one's ever called you that.
No one does.
So, Steve, what you need to do is, like, it's a clap, clap, click. Clap, okay. Clap, click. Clap, clap, click. That is adequate.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. So that kind of shows the immensity and beauty of the universe.
That's what I got from it.
Well, thank you. I thought it did as well. Yeah.
And like the passing of time as well. The passing of time. Matt, can I get you to do the sound of the spaceship, which is a repeated hum?
Right.
You just need to go hum.
Oh.
Hum.
Hum.
Nailed it.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to add the stars in the sky twinkling with the words plink, plink, obviously. Right, so Steve, can you kick us off? Matt, whenever you're ready.
I'm taking you quite literally, so I'm going to say the word hum. Hum.
Plink, plink. Plink, plink. There we go. That's everything. That's it. Matt, you can stop now. It's okay.
Oh, thank you.
So that is the backdrop for the story of the space tortoises that went around the moon. Those are the parts that everyone needs to learn at home to join in with the song. Okay, well, we'll play the song in a minute, but there is a tenuous link between this and the football. Does anyone want to guess that as well?
Is it that the shell of a tortoise is made of hexagons?
Yes! Although, I was just looking up pictures of tortoises, and it's very ambiguous because it's an organic animal, right? So some of them appear to be pentagons, and then they get squished around the edge. Honestly, the back of a tortoise looks more like the UK football street sign than a football. So I'm now confused. Is every sign in UK streets that is supposed to be pointing to a stadium actually pointing to a particularly round tortoise?
Yeah, just tortoise this way.
Connection has been made. Let's play the recording of the song that we made at An Evening of Unnecessary Detail. This is One Small Step by Brian McInwells and Helen Arney. Enjoy.
And we're going to build it up from the back. 3, 4. Blink, blink. step. Tortoise, one small step. Tortoise, one small step. Tortoise, one small step. All of you who've met the tortoise know they never set their expectations low. No, no, no. Well, we each believe they have great power as the fastest one ever went 25,000 miles an hour. Ooh. One small step, tortoise, one small step, tortoise, one small step, tortoise, one small step. They strapped her in back in 68 to the Dawn-5 rocket to navigate the lunar bridge to see if it's possible. And all young tortoises or anything was possible. One small step, tortoise, one small step, tortoise, one small step, tortoise, one small step. She was first down the moon, should have for her fame, but only other tortoises have knew her name. They passed it down from parent to kid, remembering what one small step tortoise did. One small step, tortoise, one small step, tortoise, one small step, tortoise, one small step. If you ask the tortoise, no, they won't tell. Her name stays secret hidden under their shell. But don't be surprised if they're exceeding pomposity. They know after all their potential velocity. One small step, tortoise, one small step, tortoise, one small step, tortoise, one small step. One small tortoise ran into space. 6 days moving at a rocket's pace on a lunar train. A tortoise ran into space. 6 days moving at a rocket's pace on a lunar train. And you know the best part? She came back down to Earth and lived to tell the tale. I messed up the end. Should we do it again? No. All right, Matt Parker!
I feel like I should say something now.
Yeah. Did your like hackles rise as you were like, I might have to go on,
I was
on
like,
stage?
Huh, I'm meant to be on stage. Yeah.
Every time. So this has actually been truly inspirational, writing about space tortoises. And now, later this year, I'm probably doing a 15-minute talk about space animals with a full symphony orchestra. So just stuff like that happens.
That's going to be amazing.
You know, when you put songs about space tortoises out into the universe, things come back in your direction. So I highly recommend everyone does that right now. Sing along.
We are not encouraging you to launch your own animal into space.
No. No. That would be not a good repercussion. But to create more songs about other space animals, I would be down with that.
Well, that's that episode done, which means I can go back to my default state of not thinking about football.
Fantastic.
After really intensely thinking about football.
If you really love clicking on things to get more detail, you should check out our show notes. They're linked in the episode description. There's pictures of inaccurate football signs, hexagonal tortoises, that sort of thing. And you can find out where to order Matt's new book featuring The Impossible. You can pre-order it from mathsgear.co.uk. You can also pay what you want to download the Space Tortoise song for your own personal practice time.
So we have loads of live shows coming up in our home city of London, including the 28th of April at the Royal Institution, which will also be live streamed worldwide. So wherever you are, you can join us live on stage.
If you're in New York, then you're in luck, because I'll be over there hosting an evening of Unnecessary Detail on April 14th. Although, unlucky for you if you're in New York, it's already sold out. So, I'll be back. I'll be back on August 19th with another evening of Unnecessary Detail. More phenomenal guests. Details linked below.
In the meantime, joining the mailing list is probably the best way to get all our latest show info direct to your inbox, because no one gets enough email these days. You can do that in the podcast link or on our website, festivalofthespokennerd.com.
And if you want to get in touch with any unnecessary detail of your own, podcast@festivalofthespokennerd.com is our email, because no one is getting too much email right now. We're on all the social medias as well. Come and say hi.
Although most importantly, do we mention that we're part of the Acast Creator Network?
I don't think we did.
Just for completeness, I should bring that up.
Yeah. Is it done?
No, that's it now. I think that did it, yeah.
Phew.
Well, that's all for this episode. See you next time.
Thanks.
See you next time.
Bye. Our podcast of Unnecessary Detail is made by Festival of the Spoken Nerd. That's Helen Arney, Steve Mould, and me, Matt Parker. This episode was produced by Laura Grimshaw. Our theme music is by Howard Carter. And what we're most proud of in the world is being part of the Acast Creator Network. Thank you for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.